It's October the 28th. We're in Yechezkel in Perek Lamed Ches, chapter 38. And we are up to Pasuk Yud Ches, verse 18. As I mentioned to you last time, this is where we begin reading on Shabbos Chol HaMoed Sukkos. This is where the Haftorah begins, and it goes into the next Perek. We left off with reiterating that there's a loose end over here, which is that we need to discuss the three branches of the children of Noach: Shem, Cham, and Yefes, and how strikingly the main army of Gog comes from Yefes, whereas throughout history it seems that our main enemies have been within Shem, within our own line, like from Esav and Yishmael. But here we find Yefes as the main army against the Jewish people at the end of time, or the end right around when Mashiach is supposed to come. So we said also that we would discuss the story in this past week's parsha, in Parshas Noach, about Noach and the wine and getting uncovered in his tent, and how Shem, Cham, and Yefes reacted differently to his predicament. So first let's read some psukim here, and then we'll touch on that story. So the pasuk says, in Yerches, V'hoya bayom ahu, it will be on that day, B'yom bo Gog al admas Yisrael, on the day that Gog comes onto the land of Yisrael, Nu'um Hashem Elokim, says Hashem God, Ta'alech hamasi ve'api, my anger will come up in my nostrils. U'v'kinasi ve'esh evrasi dibarti, and with my two words for anger, my indignation, okay, with the fire of my anger I have spoken. Im lo bayom ahu, if not on that day, yerash gadol, there will be a great noise, al admas Yisrael, on the land of Yisrael. Hashem is going to react, and of course the Navi is saying it in a way that we can understand. Of course Hashem does not have these emotions, nor does he have these physical attributes, but Hashem will react analogous to a human being losing his temper, blowing his top, when Gog will set foot on the land of Israel. V'ro'ashumi panai digei hayam ve'ov hashamayim v'chayas hasodeh, and they will be terrified from before me. The fish of the sea and the birds of the heavens and the animals of the field, v'chol haremes haromes al ha'adama, and all the creatures that creep on the earth, v'chol ha'adam, and all mankind, asher al pnei ha'adama, that is on the face of the land. Everything, every creature will shudder, will be terrified. V'nehersu heharim, and the mountains will fall down. V'naflu ha-madregos, and the madregos will fall. It's not clear what madregos are. Literally means steps. Rashi has a couple of explanations. The simplest is that it's stones or mountains, rock, large rocks and stones that are in the formation of stones, and they will tumble. V'chol chama la'aretz tipol, and all walls will fall to the ground. So there will be a tremendous upheaval when Gog sets foot on the land of Israel. V'karasi alav l'chol harai cherev, and I will call upon him to all my mountains the sword. Nu'um Hashem Elokim, says Hashem God. There's going to be a tremendous amount of bloodshed by the sword. Who will be killing whom? Cherev ish v'achiv tiyeh. The sword of each man will be against his brother. Meaning that it seems that Gog's army will turn on itself. It will literally implode. That they will begin to kill themselves. V'nishpati ito b'devra uvidam, and I will judge him with a plague and with blood. V'geshem shoteif, and an inundating rain. Ve'avnei el gavish, and stones of el gavish. What are stones of el gavish? So the the simple explanation is that it's large stones of hail. Rashi says, based on the Gemara, that this word El Gavish can be divided up into three words. El Gav Ish, to the back of a man or on the back of a man, meaning that these are the same pieces of hail that Moshe Rabbeinu brought down on the Egyptians. And that sort of hail will be brought down on Gog and his army. Eish Vigofris, fire and sulfur, right?
It says brimstone.
Brimstone, okay.
Sulfur, fire.
Okay. Amtiro love, I will rain upon him, Valagapov, and on all of his army. Valamim Rabim Asherito, and on all of the nations that are with him, the many nations that are with him. Vihis Gadilti, and I will be made great. Vihis Kadishti, and I will become sanctified. Vinodati, and I will become known. Leinei Goyim Rabim, to the eyes of many nations. Viyod'u ki ani Hashem, they will know that I am Hashem. When Hashem punishes, then it makes Hashem's presence known when that happens. Particularly when he punishes and it's clear what the sin is, then Hashem's presence becomes known. Everybody says that if when I would do a sin, there would be immediate retribution, then I wouldn't sin. If doing a sin, if doing an avera, would be accompanied by pain, the same way that if I put my finger in a fire, I will cry out in pain, then none of us would ever sin. How could we? We don't stick our fingers in fire because it's painful. We wouldn't do an avera if there was immediate pain. There can't be immediate pain because that would remove our free choice. If we're going to have bechira to sin, then it's got to be that there's going to be a delay in the pain. However, the drawback of that, and really it's the same, it's not really a drawback, it's really the same, it's not even this other side of the coin, it's the same thing, is that Hashem's presence is not so obvious. And that's really the same idea. If Hashem's presence were obvious, then there would be no free will. Some say, everybody agrees that angels have no free will. There are different ways of expressing that. One way of expressing it is that Hashem didn't ever create them with free will. The other way of expressing it is that theoretically they would have free will, but because they are in the presence of Hashem, and they see Hashem so clearly, it's impossible to choose wrong. Because the truth is staring them in the face. Then, for us as well, if Hashem's presence would be revealed and be obvious, then there would be no way to sin. When Hashem punishes Gog in this dramatic way and clearly shows that sinners will be punished and his people will be saved, that will, in one fell swoop, will raise him up, his name up, it will sanctify him, it will make him known amongst all the nations. The punishment of Gog, in contrast to the Jewish people being saved, will make Hashem's presence known to everyone. We all say, we know, that when Mashiach comes, Hashem's presence will be revealed in a much more palpable way. This is one of the ways it's going to be revealed. Just the very fact that sinners will be punished and those who are righteous will be saved. One of the conundrums that everybody likes to throw around and think about is why bad things happen to good people and why good things happen to bad people. The truth of the matter is that irony is necessary in order for us to have free will. If good things would always happen to good people and bad things would always happen to bad people, it would be, again, impossible to do the right thing. To have bechira. So as much as that philosophically is hard to swallow and it needs to be explained how Hashem could do it, and there are many good answers to the question, but the fact of the matter is there has to be that irony, because otherwise there wouldn't be sin. There wouldn't be free will. So here, when Mashiach is about to come on the scene and Hashem decimates Gog and his army, then there will be a revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That in itself is a revelation. I'm not saying it's the only revelation, but that certainly is part of the revelation.
This parakeet doesn't seem to include all the horrible punishment for the Jews that are there. I mean, it was from Zechariah.
That wasn't punishment. That was preceding this point.
Well, it sounded like the Jews are going to suffer a lot.
That in Yechezkel it only speaks about Gog's demise. In Zechariah, it speaks a little bit more about how dramatic it's going to be with the moving of mountains and rivers and like that. And also how it's going to be preceded by a degree of suffering. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Is this an earthquake that's being described?
It could be. In Zechariah also, because it talks about how the land masses are going to move, the geological upheaval, it sounds like an earthquake, but there's no way to know for certain. In Zechariah, it actually says you're going to run as you ran in the day of the earthquake.
Oh.
That's what it says. There was a massive earthquake in Eretz Yisrael in the time of Melech Uzziyahu, of the King Uzziyahu, when he attempted to take the kahuna, he attempted to be a kohen. There was a massive earthquake at that time, and that's described in Yeshaya, and it's described in Zechariah it's made reference to in Zechariah. So it says you'll run like on the day that you ran then. So it is invoking the story of the earthquake, but I don't know if it's going to be an earthquake.
Can I just comment? I saw on television, I think last week, I think it was North Carolina, South, somewhere, one of the states around here, it showed that huge rocks had fallen that were, some of them were as big as a house.
Wow.
Because it was showing, you know, the road was blocked.
What made them fall?
That I don't know.
Huh.
But when they described it, that each one could be as big as a house.
Wow. So maybe that's the Madre Goes. Now, so far we've read about Gog's being destroyed. We haven't read about Kal Yisrael being saved. But that will be brought up as we move along in the Psukim over here. So let's go a little further. V'ata ben Adam, and you son of man, hinave al Gog, prophesy about Gog, v'amarta, and you shall say, Ka'amar Hashem Elokim, so says Hashem God, hinani elecha Gog, behold I am against you Gog, nisi rosh meshach v'suvol, the prince and the head of Meshach and Tuvol, which are two different nations. V'shovavticha v'shishesicha, these are two words that both mean I will be the one to entice you to come. I'm going to bring you to Eretz Yisrael. Hashem is saying you're not going to have any incentives to come to Eretz Yisrael. I'm going to be the one to get you to come to Eretz Yisrael. V'halisicha, and I will bring you up in the Akesei Tzafon from the far north. V'haviosicha al Harei Yisrael, I'm going to bring you onto the mountains of Yisrael. I want you there, you Gog. You who want to destroy the Jewish people, I'm going to give you the opportunity. I want you to come because I want to decimate you in Eretz Yisrael. V'kesi kashtecha miyad smalecha, I will strike your bow from your left hand. V'chitzecha miyad yimincha apil, and your arrows I will throw down from your right hand. So I'm going to knock your weapons out of your hands. Al harei Yisrael tipol, on the mountains of Yisrael you will fall. Atav b'chol agapecha, you and all of your army. V'amim ashreitacha, the nations that are with you. Le'et tzipor kol kanaf v'chayas ha-sadeh nisaticha li'achla. For all the wild birds and the animals of the field I have given you as fodder. Which means that they're going to eat their corpses. Apnei ha-sadeh tipol, on the face of the field you will fall. Ki ani dibarti, for I have spoken. Nu'um Hashem Elokim, says Hashem God. V'shilachti esh b'magog, and don't think the people you left at home are going to get away with this. I'm also going to send a fire against Magog, which is the nation, the land, from where Gog comes. Uv'yoshvei ha'im mavetach, and those who dwell on the islands with security. They think they're secure. I'm going to send the fire against them too. V'yad'u ki ani Hashem. They're going to know that I'm God. V'eshem kodshi odia. And my sanctified name I will make known. V'soch ami Yisrael. Amongst my nation Yisrael. V'lo achel eshem kodshi od. And I will not allow my name, my sanctified name, to be profaned anymore. V'yad'u ha'goyim ki ani Hashem. And the Goyim will know that I am Hashem, Kadosh be Yisrael, sanctified in Yisrael. When it says that I will not allow, when it says that my name will become sanctified within my nation Yisrael, what the point that's being made is that when Klal Yisrael is downtrodden, it is a profaning of Hashem's name. Because Hashem identifies His name with us, and He has us identified with His name, and that's a bond that He will never break, that He has guaranteed that our existence and His name are forever intertwined. So when we are downtrodden, it is a Chilul Hashem. It is the greatest of all Chilul Hashems. When we are uplifted, it is the greatest of all Kiddush Hashems. And so that's what he's saying over here. When I save the Bnei Yisrael and I destroy Gog, it will be a sanctification of Hashem's name. Hineva'a, behold, it is coming. Viniyasa, it will be. Numa Hashem Lakim, says Hashem God. Hu hayom asher dibarti, that is the day that I have spoken. Now, that's the story of Gog attacking Eretz Yisrael and being utterly destroyed. But now, we get we get the story of what happens afterwards. And we will see that there's a lot of print for something which doesn't seem to be so important. And we're going to see right now. So pay attention to what the Navi chooses to emphasize and to repeat over and over. Something which we would have thought, okay, one line is enough. V'yatz'u yoshvei arei Yisrael, and those who dwell in the cities of Yisrael will go out. This is after the war is over. Uvi'aru v'hisiku, and they will burn. Two different words for burn. B'neshek u'magein v'tzina b'keshes u'v'chitzim u'v'makal yad u'v'romach. These are all different types of weapons. They will make fires and burn all of the different weapons, the shields and the swords and the bows and the arrows, all the different types of weaponry that will be brought against Israel. They will use them as firewood. Uvi aruvahem, they will burn with them Esha fire Sheva Shanim for 7 years. There will be so many weapons, just to give you the scope of the army that's coming against Klal Yisrael, there will be so much weaponry that there'll be enough fuel for 7 years. And the Pasuk, in the next Pasuk, tells you the flip side of that. V'lo yisu eitzim min ha-sadeh, they won't have to bring any wood from the field. V'lo yachtevu min ha-yarim, they won't have to chop down from the forests. Kivan neshek yivaru esh, for with the weaponry, how do they translate neshek over there? The Mitzvah Sin just says a type of weapon.
Weapons.
Because with weaponry, they will burn fire. So there will be no need for any kind of fuel to be brought from the fields. V'shalalu es shalalehem, they will take their spoils. Uvazazu es bozazehem, another word for spoils. Numa Hashem Elokim, says Hashem God. Now, this is not the point I was making before, but it is curious to me, and this is one of those mysteries which we'll know when it happens, that as the world's fuel becomes more and more modern, wood burning is a thing of the past. Not that it's impossible to do, but that we know that today, even if you would present a nation with 7 years worth of firewood for the entire nation, they still wouldn't use firewood. They would use oil and gas, mm-hmm. electricity,
nuclear.
Right. So it's curious to me, not only that, but the weaponry that's used today isn't made out of wood. All these types of weapons that are being described, so we don't have to be stuck with swords and bows and arrows, because the modern bow and arrow would be gunpowder and bullets and explosives and tanks and planes and bombs. That's not difficult to say that that's what is meant by these different weapons. But they're not made out of wood. So what is being said over here? So there's two possible answers, but of course there could be more, and again, we'll find out in the future. But to me, there's two possible answers. One is that just as I'm suggesting the weapons are really analogous to modern weaponry, so too the fuel is analogous to modern fuel. There'll be no need for the future state of Israel at that time, the Klal Yisrael living in Eretz Yisrael, there'll be no need to get any kind of oil or any kind of fuel like that, because they'll have the fuel of the weaponry, which will last them 7 years. That's how much weaponry they'll be brought against them. That's one possibility. Another possibility is that the way that we live today will radically change before Mashiach comes. And we don't know. We don't know if, remember, that all of this post-industrial evolution way of living, and especially the post-nuclear revolution way of living, all of this way that we live today, especially with oil and gas, all of that is a very, very recent change in how the world is run. In the scope of history, it's a tiny, tiny blip. We don't know if this is the way of the future or not. Even alternative fuels, solar and wind and things like that, but we don't know how it's actually going to work in the future. So the way we have our lives today, perhaps it'll be like this when Mashiach comes. Perhaps we'll already have gone back to the way it used to be, and the comforts of technology that we have today perhaps won't really be in existence then. We don't know. We have no way of knowing. It's very hard to imagine.
They have the solar flares now that they say happens every, I don't know, 1,000 years or whatever. And that if the solar flare hits Earth, that all things mechanical will stop.
Our everything we do runs in this new way. All our homes are built that way. Our homes are built for assuming heating and cooling and things like that. That they're not even built in a way that could accommodate any other method of living. And so we don't know what will be. We don't have no idea. But
just on the word weaponry, is that the same source as like neshaka, to kiss?
That's interesting. That's interesting. It is the same letters.
Because it seems to be not to fit right.
Yeah. The word for weaponry, the shoresh is nun shin kuf. For kissing, it is not nun shin, it's yud shin kuf. Yeah, I think. Yeah, yishak. Hashaka. Maybe it might even be shin. It might even be menashik. Maybe it is nun shin kuf. Nishika. It is the same shoresh. I don't know. That's a good point. It would seem to be the opposite. Right. Okay. Good point. She's among all the big guns. Pardon the pun. Right. I'm going to keep reading though. But if you find it, please let us know. V'haya b'yom ha'hu. Now the pasuk continues with a whole nother postscript. Will be on that day. Attain leGog makom sham kever biYisrael. I will give Gog a place there in Yisrael as a grave. Gay haUrim kidmas hayam, in the valley of those who go across to the east or from the east of the ocean. The ocean that is being referred to here, Rashi says, is the Kinneres, the Kinneret. That it doesn't mean the ocean, it means the sea, whatever, these words are kind of interchangeable in English. So it means the Kinneret. And there'll be a valley there for those who go across the Kinneret. I'm not sure if the valley is on the east side of the Kinneret, and it just means Kidmas Hayam on the east side, or if it means on the west side of the Kinneret, going towards, for those who cross to the east side. I'm not sure what side of the Kinneret this valley is on. So there'll be a grave site there for the Gog and his armies. V'chosemes hiyas ha'overim, and it muzzles those who pass. what does it mean to muzzle those who pass? So it's two ways of learning it. Either it means that there are going to be so many corpses there, people won't be able to use the crossing of the Kinneret, the normal way to get on the boats to go across. They won't be able to because there are going to be so many corpses in the way. And they'll have to clear a path. So what are they going to do? They're going to move the bodies and bury them so that they'll be able to get to where they're going. The other explanation is that it muzzles them because the stench will be so bad from the corpses. Same thing. They're going to have to get rid of the corpses in order to be able to use that port properly. V'kavru sham es Gog v'es kol hamono. They will bury there Gog and all of his multitudes. V'karu, and they will call that place Gei Hamon Gog, the valley of the multitudes of Gog. U'kvaru mebeis Yisrael, the house of Yisrael will bury them. Leman taheres haaretz, in order to purify the land. Shiv'a chadashim, 7 months. It's going to take 7 months to bury all of the corpses. V'kavru kol am haaretz, and all of the and they will bury all the of the Am Haaretz. V'hayah lahem l'shem, and it will be for them as a name. Meaning, as Rashi explains, the nations of the world will be astounded that the Jewish people are bothering to bury their enemies instead of just leaving them to rot. Yom hikavdi, the day that I am honored, Neum Hashem Elokim, says Hashem God. Here again we see that when the Jewish people are praised amongst the nations, it is an honor to God, because since we are so inextricably tied, then when we are exalted by the nations, then so is Hashem. And they are going to praise us because we are going to bother to bury our enemies. Now, so far though, who's burying them? It's going to be the ones that need to travel, and they're in the way. So there's going to be so many corpses, so they will bury the corpses because it's going to be practical to do so. However, Yadalit says, V'anshe Samid, and men of Tamid means constant. It means designated people who will be their job constantly. Yavdilu, they Ovrim Ba'aretz, they will be separated as those who pass through the land. Mikabrim es Ha'ovrim, they will bury along with those who travel. Es Hanosarim, those who are left over, Apnei Ha'aretz, on the face of the land, L'tahara, to purify it. So there will be designated groups of Jews who will bury other corpses that were not in the main area. The main area will be buried by the people who have to travel. But there will be other groups who will be designated to bury those who are not in the main area. Miktzei shiva chadashim yachkoru, at the end of 7 months, then they will have to investigate. Meaning that until 7 months, there will be so many corpses, there will be no need for looking for corpses. They'll be all over the place. At the end of 7 months, then they're going to have to start looking carefully to make sure they didn't miss anything. And there will be people passing through the land. They'll see the bone of a man, meaning someone who died. So those who pass by, when they see the bone of a man, they will build next to that bone a tziyun. A tziyun is a marker. Ad kavru oso amakabrim, until the buriers, those who bury, have a chance to bury that bone. El Gei Hamon Gog, to the valley of the multitudes of Gog. Vigam Shem Ir Hamona v'tiharu ha'aretz, and also the name of the city Hamona, and the land will be purified. So this pasuk is difficult to translate what exactly it means. So the way Rashi explains it is, and also the name, the city that is named Ir Hamona, the city that is named the city of multitudes, they'll also be buried in this place. V'tiaru ha'aretz, and the land will be purified. It seems that there will be a very large city that is the city of the evil people, of Gog and his henchmen, and they will also be destroyed and be buried in this same place in Gei Hamon Gog.
What do the Kohanim do at this point? Because they can't travel then, and
right,
there's dead everywhere.
So that's
right?
The purpose of this tziyun, of this marker. For the first 7 months, the Kohanim will be stuck. But then, this marker will be to show people where the... Right. Not just Kohanim, but people who are bringing things that are tahar, and they need to remain tahar, etc. That's going to be the purpose of the tziyun, of the marker. This is where the Haftorah ends. The story still continues a little bit further. And perhaps we'll leave that for next week. But that's where the Haftorah ends. So it is to me a question why the Navi spends so much time talking about the burial. There's going to be a burial for Gog in this place, and they're going to name it Gei Hamon Gog. And they're going to bury everybody. It's going to take 7 months. And there's going to be people are going to be appointed to get other, to get the ones, the corpses that weren't so obvious. And then they're going to have to investigate afterwards to make sure they didn't miss anything. And then if you see a bone, you're going to put up a marker until they have a chance to get to it and bury it. It just seems like a lot of talk about burial. More than that, if the Navi is telling us that we're going to name the place Gei Hamon Gog, the Valley of the Multitude of Gog, it means that place is going to become a monument. It's going to become, after Mashiach comes, a national monument. You know, like an Omaha Beach with D-Day, you know, that kind of thing. It's going to be this place, or Gettysburg, okay, or that sort of thing. So it's going to be this place that even after Mashiach comes, but it's not going to be memorializing our dead, because our people aren't going to get killed. It's going to be a place. It's not really memorializing the dead. It's going to be a place where we're going to know this is where they were buried. This is where the people of Gog and with them were buried. This is where Hashem, they were destroyed, and now they're here. So the way that we're going to remember this battle forever after is with this Gei Hamon Gog, this Valley of the Multitude of Gog. So what's the emphasis here on the burial? So now, let's recall what happened this past week's Parsha. Go ahead.
No, I noticed maybe it was a commentary I read, but it said that the reward that Yefesh got...
Excellent. Is?
To be buried.
To be buried. In this battle right here. This is the... This is it.
Okay. It said to be buried in Israel.
Right.
That was the reward.
That's right.
Helping shame.
That's right. Okay. So we actually spoke about this nearly 3 years ago in the creation class. And I quickly reviewed it today online. We'll quickly say over what we said then, because this is really the where we have to discuss it. We know the story how Noach, after coming out of the Teva, he grows wine and he becomes drunk. Then we discussed why he became drunk, what was the point of the wine. It wasn't just, you know, it wasn't like he lost control of himself. It was a premeditated thing. Noah had a reason for it, and his reason didn't work out. It turned out not to be appropriate, but Noah was a tzaddik, and he had real reasons for doing it. At any rate, he got drunk, and we know that when he got drunk, and he was uncovered in his tent, Cham, or the way Rashi says it, Kenan, the son of Cham, saw, and came out and told Cham, and Cham then told his brothers. But Rashi tells us that Cham, before he told his brothers, he either molested his father or he castrated his father. It seems like he definitely castrated his father. He may have also molested him. And then he told his brothers. Shem and Yefes then took the blanket and they went into the tent. And the Torah emphasizes Ufnehem Achoranis. Their faces were backwards. They were looking away from their father. And they buried, it says it twice, in fact. And they covered their father. They covered their father with a blanket. So Noach wakes up and he realizes what happened. And Noach then says the fateful words. It's the only quoted words of Noach in all of Chumash. Mm-hmm. If you look through, Noach is never directly quoted, except for this. First he says, Alur Kenan. Kenan is cursed. Ever Avadim Yelachav, a slave of slaves, he will be to his brothers. And then it says, Baruch Hashem Elokei Shem. He says that Hashem, the God of Shem, is blessed. Vehi Kenan Eved Lamo, and Kenan should be a slave to him. Yaft Elokim LeYefes, Hashem should spread out Yefes. Yefes should be spread out, which means he's going to have a lot of children, and he'll be the bulk of the people in the world. V'yishkon ba'ol Hashem, but Hashem will dwell in the tent of Shem. V'chanan eved mamon, Canaan will be a slave to them. In the children of Shem, Ham, and Yefes, you find that there are 70 nations, as we know. There are 70 nations born to Shem, Ham, and Yefes. The Torah lists them. If you go through, Ham has 30 of the 70 nations. Shem has 26 of the 70 nations. That's 56. How many does that leave for Yefes? Only 14. There are only 14. He's the smallest, by far, of the three branches in terms of how many nations. But how many people are in his nations, that we know, Yefes becomes a very, very large group. Yefes spreads out and populates the world. That's a reward for what he did in acting properly. But, V'yishkon ba'ahalei Shem, but Hashem will dwell in the tents of Shem. The Gemara says several things from here. One of the things it says is that even though in the second Beit HaMikdash, which was authorized by Koresh is the one who authorized the building of the second Beit HaMikdash. He came from Yefes. Paras, Persia, is from Yefes. Even though he authorized the second Beit HaMikdash, but we know the second Beit HaMikdash did not have Hashem's presence as the first Beit HaMikdash did. V'yishkon ba'ahalei Shem, Hashem will dwell in the tent of Shem in the first Beit HaMikdash, which is the one that was built by Shlomo HaMelech, who comes from Shem. Another thing the Gemara says based on this is that even though there is beauty in Yefes, Yefes also means beautiful, mm-hmm. Yafa. Even though Yefes is beautiful, it has they have art and they have music and they have culture and they have beauty, but v'yishkon ba'ahalei Shem, that the beauty of Yefes is only valuable when it's in the Ohel of Shem, when it's with Shem, which is why, although a Torah has to be written in Lashon HaKodesh, in Hebrew, it can also be written in Greek, which is considered to be Yap Yafisu Shel Yefes. The most beautiful part of Yefes is considered to be Yavan, is the Greeks. And so, therefore, you can write a Sefer Torah in Greek. The beauty of Yefes should be found in the Ohel of Shem.
There's another explanation, Vishkon Hashem, according, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it will dwell, right, the Hashem will, meaning the Sefer Torah. That's what it's referring to. Now, or maybe it's the beauty will dwell in the tent of Shem. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could also be that way. Why does Shem get the better of the bracha? They both covered their father. So this is based on a subtlety. And the subtlety is because when it says that they took the covering, and they covered their father, it says, Vayikach Shem Vayefes es Hasimla. Shem and Yefes took the blanket. But it doesn't say, Vayikhu Shem Vayefes es Hasimla, Vayikhu being the plural for take, and they took the blanket. It says, and he took Shem and Yefes the Simla. Why is it singular and not plural? So I pointed this out to you way back then, that this is a method the Torah uses, that when there's more than one person involved in something, if the Torah uses the plural, it means that they did it together. The Torah may list them, 1, 2, 3, 4, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the one who's listed first is better than the one listed second. You gotta list both. And if you have to list both, you can have to put one first and one second. So the very fact that you need to list both means someone's gonna have to go first, but that doesn't mean that he is better. But if the Torah uses the singular verb instead of the plural verb, then what the Torah is saying is that although there were two people involved, the first person listed is the main person involved. Vayikach Shem. Shem took the singular. Vayefes, also Yefes, he did too, but he was secondary. He did not do it with the same it wasn't as important that Yefes did it than what Shem did. Why? What's the difference? So the Mefarshim explain that Shem, when he did it, he covered his father. Let's start with Yefes. Why did Yefes cover his father? Yefes covered his father because it is disrespectful for his father to be uncovered. it is wrong and disrespectful, and it is improper for his father to be uncovered. And therefore, as a son, he felt it was appropriate to go cover his father. That's why Yefes did it. Shame covered his father for a subtly different reason. He did it because Hashem says that it is improper to be uncovered, and Hashem says it is the duty of a son to take care of his father. And therefore he covered his father. Shame did it out of a sense of obligation to Hashem, out of wanting to do that which Hashem says to do. Yefes did it out of a sense of decency, morality, but not because Hashem said to do it. Both Shem and Yefes are rewarded for their efforts. Besides what Noach says, Hashem rewards Shem and Yefes. Both are rewarded midah keneged midah, measure for measure. They're rewarded with decency. Just like they helped someone who was in an indecent position become decent, they are also given the bracha of decency, of respect. In what way? Shame, the Gemara tells us, gets a talis that has tzitzis. Yefes gets burial here in the Battle of Gog. And Cham, who was disrespectful and was indecent, the Torah tells us, the Navi tells us, that when the Bnei Cham were taken into Golus, as we were taken into Golus, when we were taken into Golus, we were taken in chains and taken into Golus. But the Navi emphasizes that when Cham was taken into Golus, his children were taken in chains and naked into Golus, without any decency, without any respect. The way they were treated was with a disrespect, which was a mida keneged mida, a measure for measure, and how he treated his father. So then, this is the story, and this is the story that really sets the tone for the three branches of the Bnei Noach, Shem, Cham, and Yefes. Obviously, it's not just one story. What the Torah is trying to tell us is this story personifies who they were. Cham acted as he did because that's the kind of person he was. Yefes acted as he did because that's the kind of person he was, and Shem acted as he did because that's the kind of person he was. When you have the battle of Gog Umagog, what is happening is that the large multitudes of people throughout the world, where is their soul going to be? Where are they going to end up? You have these three branches. Shame is spoken for. We represent shame. Yes, there are others. There's Esav, there's Yishmael, but they don't represent shame. We represent shame. Shame was a tzaddik, and we are the manifestation of his tzidkus, his righteousness. That goes down to us. And we stand for being tzaddikim. Cham, they continue with their way of acting, which is improper. Yefes is everybody else. What happened to everybody else? All those nations out there that are neither shame nor cham. They are neither end of the spectrum. They're not shame, meaning the Jewish people. They're not shame, the those of shame who went astray like Esav and Yishmael. They're not cham. They're all those people. What's with all those people? At the very end, before Mashiach comes, and it's going to take until then, because until then they're not really in the main stage of history. Right before Mashiach comes, that's when the true colors of Yefes will come out. Yefes has no problem with the Jews bringing morality to the world, because Yefes is a moral person. Yefes has no issue with that. Unlike Hitler Yimach Shemo, who couldn't stand the consciousness that we brought to the world, the conscience that we brought to the world. Yefes doesn't have a problem with that, because Yefes is decent. Yefes is moral. That's fine. But in the end, just before Mashiach comes, just before Hashem reveals himself, Yefes is doing things because Yefes believes that it should be moral. Because Yefes believes in decency. Yefes both defines what decency is and morality is for himself, and does it because he says that it should be that way. There is a subtle difference in doing the right thing because it's decent and moral, and doing the right thing because Hashem said so. The difference is that when you do it because it's the right thing to do, then it means that I define morality. I define decency. If I think it's decent to end somebody's life because their quality of life has been diminished, and therefore there's no point in living anymore, and I think that that's a good thing, then that becomes my definition of decency and morality. But that can't happen when I don't define what decency and morality is. Decency and morality is defined for me by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a major difference. Somebody told me that yesterday they were in I don't want to say exactly where they were, but they were in a place where they should have known better. And this person was in a place, the people in that place should have known better. And there was a list on the wall of miracles. It was a place where there were classrooms, and there was a list on the wall of miracles. Apparently, there had been a class about miracles. And there was a list where they had written in different miracles that the students or the teacher had said are miracles. And there was, what's a miracle today? And there were things like, the rain and the morning sun, things like that. And they had other things as well. They had good food, whatever that they were calling miracles. There was in that list, one of the things listed was the ability to end a life that can't be lived with a quality of life, something like that. That was in that list as a miracle that it's a wonderful thing that you can end such a life. That comes from people who are defining their own decency and morality. They don't mean to be bad, but they're obviously misguided. When a person defines their decency and morality by what the Torah says, then you don't have those misplaced ideas. That's one subtle difference between whether you do it because Hashem said so or because it is inherently decent or moral. There really is no such thing as inherent decency and morality. The another subtle difference between the two is that as much as a person says, I want to be a decent person and I want to be a moral person, you can only get pushed so far. A person can be committed to decency and morality because it's the right thing. But what happens when that decency and morality is, there's a choice between decency and morality and something that is very important to a person? When it comes to my money versus decency and morality. When it comes to my family versus decency and morality. When it comes to things that really touch deeply in a person, then even those who are committed very strongly to decency and morality can fall. When the decency and morality is something which we are commanded to do, and we do it because we are commanded to do it, then even when it gets tough, we do it out of a sense of obligation. It keeps us doing it, even though it may cost a lot. And that is another difference between the two. At the end, right before Mashiach comes, Yefes, who has had no problem with Klal Yisrael, with the idea of decency and morality, as long as it's not a God-given decency and morality. But when it comes down to the end, and clearly the Bnei Yisrael are about to represent this notion of living for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and everything goes according to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're living in these cities unprotected by any kind of natural, of man-made means. They don't care because they believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yefes will not be able to stand it anymore. Yefes will not be able to accept the notion that everything is run by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. even things that are that seem to be a man-made concept of decency and morality. And that's when Yefes will lead, Gog will lead the nations against Klal Yisrael. Does it mean, as was asked last week, does it mean every single non-Jew is going to do the wrong thing? No. They'll, just like today, there are going to be non-Jews who will rise above everybody else and will accept the Kadosh Baruch Hu. But the bulk of the nations are going to show their true colors at that time. And Hashem is going to deliberately give them the opportunity to do it so that He can decimate them and show His great name. That's what's happening here in the battle of Gog and Magog at the time Mashiach comes. And that's why it takes place only then. That's why Yefes finally shows himself only then. Only right before the revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To me, it's still very difficult to fathom where this fits in vis-a-vis the whole idea of Esav and Yishmael, who we know they are our arch enemies. They're not involved in this. Even if we're going to say that, like Rabbi Eisen suggested, which we mentioned last week, that Gog, the man Gog, is from Esav, but that's not where the army is from. That's not the battle. And it's difficult to understand where Esav and Yishmael fit in to this whole thing.
It doesn't say what's going to happen to them.
Well, we know they're also going to be destroyed, but it seems that they may even precede this. That's what I'm wondering. I'm not sure where it goes. I'm not sure. It seems that there may be that Esav and Edom may have already been dealt with by Mashiach ben Yosef, perhaps. Because we know that Esav can only be defeated by children of Rachel. Let me take a step back. I will end it with enough time to get upstairs for the Rachel Emanu thing. The simple understanding without Gog Magog, the simple understanding of why you need to have a Mashiach ben Yosef preceding a Mashiach ben David, is because in order to have Mashiach ben David, you have to defeat Esav and Amalek. And they can only be defeated, as the Gemara says, from Zaro Shel Rachel. Zaro Shel Esav is only Nimsar, is only given over, the children of Esav are only given over to Zaro Shel Rachel, the children of Rachel. It has to be led by Yosef or Binyamin. David is not from Yosef or Binyamin, he's from Yehuda, which is from Leah. So you have to have a leader that can defeat Esav prior to the arrival of Mashiach ben David. That's the simple explanation. Even though we don't know much about Mashiach ben Yosef, but the need for Mashiach ben Yosef seems clear. Here, it would also seem then that Mashiach ben Yosef, if he is going to be killed in this battle, he's already led the Jewish people back to Eretz Yisrael, but not with a Beis HaMikdash, it's just that the Klal Yisrael is already somewhat in their land. Perhaps he's already dealt with the body of Esav and Yishmael. I don't know. This is all speculative. And like we started with Gog Magog, speculation, we can throw it out there. It's just not worth our time and effort because we're not going to know. We're just not going to know. We can speculate and speculate and speculate. We're just not going to know. It's like making predictions about an election or making predictions about a sports game. You can make all the predictions you want, but you're not going to know until it happens.
Yishmael supposed to be destroyed also then?
Destroyed. I don't mean totally wiped out. I mean, but they're, any ability they have to, any power they have to be destroyed.
Okay. Hashad Amalek can only be destroyed by Binyamin.
Yeah.
Okay. And then also, is Ham not a player either now or later because they're servants?
Remember we said that there are two nations amongst the nations listed from Ham. Cush and Put were listed as nations that are with Gog, but they're not the main part of the army.
Right, but there's also Ishmael and Esav from Shem who aren't really there,
Right.
So the majority.
Right, that's right. Okay. That's right. Okay, so we'll have one more shir on Gog and Magog starting from Pasuk. What are we up to here? What are you, Yud Zion? Okay, so Pasuk Yud Zion, 17. Until the end of the Parak Mitzvah Hashem next week. So next week we go back to our regular time of 8 o'clock.